So friends, which side of the aisle do you sit on? It's going to be part of our question that we're going to be wrestling with today as we think about Paul's letter to the Romans. At our Bible study Tuesday, our group that gathers here regularly, semi-regularly, maybe more accurate, on Tuesdays, we did our study on Paul. We did it on Romans, but really we talked just as much about Paul. And so just to get ourselves all on the same page, Paul is the guy who moved across the Mediterranean Sea, up along the coastline in what we now call Turkey, what we now call Greece, moving all along starting churches. A bunch of churches, more churches than we probably are ever going to be aware of. Constantly going town to town, starting all these churches. An amazing person. We see him as a hero. We see him as a saint. In fact, we have Lutheran churches, churches across this country that are called St. Paul Lutheran Church. You may have heard of one that's in just the next town over. That's the kind of regard that we give to Paul. Paul ran around starting these churches, and Paul had such wisdom and such experience that he would write letters to these churches even when he wasn't there. And we have some of those letters in this book, and we read them, and they are sacred text. From Paul, we get some of the most powerful words that we carry in this house. Grace, forgiveness, love. Those are divine words, God words, but Paul uses them in such a way that they captivate us. We love Paul. Paul didn't start the Roman church. This is part of what we talked about in our Bible study. Paul didn't start the church. In fact, he says at the beginning of Romans that he didn't start the church, but he knows about the church, and they know about him, because even in that time, there was such prestige for Paul that they were in the midst of a bit of a problem, a little bit of a fracas in their church. And so they needed Paul's wisdom. So they wanted Paul to come and check on them and see what was going on. Give a little consultation, if you will. A couple-day retreat with the council and maybe some elders. And before he went, he sent a letter, which is what we have in the Bible. We love Paul. We adore Paul. Paul's amazing. Paul's a hero. Paul's a saint. Paul's an apostle. Paul's one of those people that some of us have aspired to be. We would love to be like Paul. If only we had his charisma and his, you know, his ability and willingness to talk to people, that's kind of helpful for him. Some of us are a little more uncomfortable than that. But we love Paul so much that we even call him a martyr. Because when he went to Rome, he was arrested. He was thrown in prison, and then he was executed, history says, more than likely because of his faith, because he was also arrested periodically in his career because of his faith. We love Paul. So at our Bible studies, we are talking about Paul, and we're kind of laying some of this out just to remind ourselves who Paul is. I invited us to think about Paul differently. What if we looked at Paul from a different perspective? Would that change the way that we saw our brother, our apostle, our saint? Imagine, friends, that you are Roman citizens. Imagine that you are loyal to your Roman government. Imagine that you have the Roman banner or flag hanging out on your porch, that periodically we will pledge allegiance to our emperor, because it wasn't called a nation at that time, it was the Roman Empire, but that we are loyal to our nation. We're loyal to our people, to our government. And we love what the Caesar is doing. We love what's going on with the governmental programs that are stretching out all across the world. Our skills, our technology is benefiting the lives of people in multiple nations. We're getting our aqueducts and our paved roads out there. It's brilliant and it's amazing. Except we can see on social media that there's this guy named Paul. By the way, he can't even bother to have a last name. He just goes by Paul. But this guy is blowing up Twitter. He's got a bunch of hashtags. He's moving all over the place, and people are talking about him. People are excited about him. And what Paul is doing is he's starting these organizations in these small little towns and a couple big ones. And these people are getting together, and they're starting to worship this god, which is fine because we got enough gods. If they want their own god, they can have a god. But they're starting to worship this god. But here's the problem, friends. Here we are in our Roman Empire, and we love what our Roman Empire is doing. And here's this guy named Paul, with all these hashtags, and starting these organizations, and these organizations are not participating in our civic activities. They're not showing up at the parades. They're not even participating in the markets. They're not coming to the farm sales where they're swapping all their goods. They're just keeping them to themselves. These organizations that Paul is starting, they're corrosive. They're instigating. They're causing problems. They're creating their own economy. They're denying the economy that surrounds them that benefits the common good. Paul really should be put in his own place. He really should be arrested. This guy's a bit of a problem. He's an instigator. He's a troublemaker. He's starting to stir up factions. We need to get him out of the way. Maybe not executed. That's a bit much. But he needs to be silenced because he's causing problems with our empire. Ridiculous, I know, this perspective to have. But I invite us to be thinking about Paul in a different angle because Paul invites us in the letter to Romans, and we hear a little bit of it in our reading for today. Our reading for today is only like 4 or 5 verses. It is super short out of a letter that is 16 chapters long. But in this reading for today, Paul alludes to what's going on in the Roman church. What they need help with is that there's two main groups that are trying to run the church, and they can't quite decide who's going to be in charge. So Paul writes this letter because Paul is inviting the people of the Roman church, and he's inviting us this morning because we're reading his letter. He's inviting us to see if we can decentralize ourselves. Because when we centralize ourselves in any conversation, the almost immediate implication is that something about our perspective is right, and something about the perspective of the person who's across the aisle, or across the street, or lives in the next zip code, or lives in the next state, or lives across the border, or lives on the other side of the planet, something about their perspective is inherently wrong. We're closer to right, at least when we put ourselves at the center, and the other person has to be closer to wrong. They are more flawed. And so Paul is inviting the Roman church, the people who are reading this letter, to decentralize themselves. There's two main groups. There are the Jewish people, folks of the Abrahamic faith. That's the language that Paul uses in Romans. People of the Abrahamic faith. It's a faith that comes from Abraham, the guy in the book of Genesis who, whenever God says go, Abraham packs up his tents and packs up his wife and packs up his goats and packs up his people, and he goes. Abraham follows God practically to the end of the earth. Abraham even offers to sacrifice his own son because God calls on him to do that. This faith that Abraham has, he passes on to his son, gets passed on to his son, gets passed on to his son. It travels all the way down into Egypt. It survives enslavement for several hundred years. It gets passed on to a guy named Moses who climbs up to the top of a mountain and chisels out some rules onto a couple of stone tablets and carries them down. It survives crossing the Red Sea. It survives the wilderness for 40 years. It survives war. It survives famine. It survives hardship. It survives death. Thousands of years of turmoil and struggle and joy. The Abrahamic faith is vibrant and has much to teach about God enduring with God's people. The people of the Abrahamic faith in the Roman church have centralized themselves. And they're looking across the aisle because there's the Gentiles. The Gentiles, the ones who are starting to believe in Jesus. The Gentiles are the ones, by the way, who they hear about Jesus and they get so excited that they show up the next day for worship with guitars. And then later on they show up with pianos. And now they've got tambourines. And now they're doing all this crazy stuff. These people are so excited about what Jesus can do that they even bothered to install an organ without anybody asking. And now everybody is singing, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." The people of the Abrahamic faith are sitting on their side of the church, centralized on themselves, and trying to understand how the faith of Jesus can work without knowing anything about this Abrahamic faith. And on the other side of the aisle sit the Gentiles, or the Greeks, depending on your translation. And the Greeks have heard about Jesus, and they are fired up. This guy died, and he offered healing, and he offered new life, and he draws all these people in, and he grants forgiveness, and he will welcome the stranger. And in 3 days after his death, he rises again, and that new life is for every single one of us. And they are so excited about what Jesus can do that they're looking across the aisle at these people of the Abrahamic faith, and wondering, why are you dealing with all those old dusty books? You don't need all those books. You don't need all those prophets. We don't care about the kings. We care about Jesus. He's our king. Why do we need all those books? You know what? When we put together our Bible, I think we're going to call your books the Old Testament because we've got the new story. We have Jesus. And the Gentiles are sitting on their side of the aisle in their centralized understanding, looking across and trying to figure out why the people of the Abrahamic faith are holding on to this old tradition and these old worn out ways. When we stand in the center of our conversation, when we stand in the center of our perspectives, we will inherently see the other as somehow implicitly wrong. Whether we're talking about religion, or we're talking about politics, or we're talking about economic status, or immigration status, or orientation, or where we come from, or what side of the border we live on, or where we come from in this world. However we got here, when we look at the other and we place ourselves in the center, inherently the other is more wrong than us. Paul calls this the spirit of fear. This is where we finally make it to the text that we have for today. Paul talks about having a spirit of fear. We aren't given a spirit of fear, but we have a spirit of fear. It's rooted in our sin. It's our willingness to see ourselves at the center, and a spirit of fear tells us that there's only so much God to go around. God can't possibly be with the people of the Abrahamic faith and the people who are worshiping Jesus at the same time. God can't possibly be with us at Trinity Lutheran Church and with the Methodists and with the Brethren and with the E-Free and with Living Hope. God can't possibly be in Oregon at the same time. There's not enough God to go around when we place ourselves at the center and we begin to believe that for grace and forgiveness and love is limited. It's a resource, like all the other limited, scarce resources in our lives. And so we need to hold on tight. In fact, maybe we need to hold on tighter to our understanding of God and our understanding of how God works in this world and help our brothers and sisters across the aisle realize that they're a little more wrong. So if they could realize that we are more right, then they would come in and then there would be enough God and grace to go around. It's a spirit of fear that convinces us that there's not enough. That there's never enough. And so we have to work harder, we got to pray harder, we got to convince more people, and we inherently start seeing others as wrong, as flawed, as so different that they are almost less than us. And then Paul starts talking about a spirit of life. He doesn't use that language in our particular reading. If you had your Bibles handy, you would see at the top of chapter 8, he uses that phrase, spirit of life. Now, in this house, we believe that spirit of life comes through Christ. Christ who became us, and he becomes us to pull us out of the center, to help us to recognize that God was here not just for us, but that God was born into this world to be with humanity, with all of God's people. So Jesus pulls us out of the center, and Jesus gives us a spirit of life. And that life which comes through the cross, which comes to the resurrection and the promise of forgiveness, pulls us out of the middle and helps us to see that God is abundantly at work in this world, not just with us, not just in Trinity Lutheran Church, but all across this community, even the people who live across the street from us, the people who we share a fence with, the people who live in that next zip code down the hill from us, let alone the folks who live on the other side of the state, folks who live on the other side of the country, who live across the border, who live across this world. Jesus comes and pulls us out because as much as we don't like it, we can't take ourselves out of the center. Our nature, our spirit of fear, as Paul calls it, won't let us do it. We will inherently and always put ourselves at the center, so it takes the power of God to pull us out and to reframe our vision to see what God can do. That God could be working for thousands of years with our brothers and sisters and to have a faith that sustains all the trauma of life and continues to live and breathe and give us new vision and new wisdom and new understandings of what God can do. That same God is the one who becomes us to solidify the bond that God made with creation, so that we can continue to see what God is doing, continue to envision what God might be up to in our lives and in our community, because when we pull ourselves out of the center and we're looking through God, we see our neighbor struggling like us, wondering like us, doubting like us, fearful like us, wondering if there's ever going to be enough. We have been given a spirit of life, brothers and sisters, and we get to share that life. We get to proclaim that life. We get to live out that life in just a few minutes when some of us head out and serve our neighbors in this community who cannot do the work that others of us can do. We get to share this life, this abundance of grace and forgiveness and love. Paul invites us that as we're looking across the aisle or looking across the street, that through the cross, we will see God at work and we get to imagine together what God has in store for us, for our community, and for creation. Amen.